Welcome to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. Today, we'll attempt to sort out the good information from the bad and set the record straight on your good health. Healthcare and wellness issues can be so confusing these days, with information constantly changing. Let us help you learn what you need to know. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Neil Nathan, with co-host Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum.
Welcome, welcome to our show, The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, and today Dr. Teitelbaum will not be joining us. He is off teaching, but I am joined by my very good friend and guest, the medical director and creator of Gordon Medical Associates, Dr. Eric Gordon, and we are going to be talking about a wide variety of toxicities that we're being exposed to. A very important show, and I hope we'll be able to get to a lot of important information. So I would like to thank our sponsors, Research Nutritionals, BioResource, Metagenics, and Frequency Specific Microcurrent for making this program possible. Since we use these products daily in our practice, as our program unfolds, I'll be mentioning some of those products by name when appropriate. If you have any questions for us, we are live, so please call 1-866-472-5792 or email me at neilnathan@earthlink.net. I'd like to remind you that you can download the Voice America mobile app, and you can find us on iTunes, Google Playtime, and Kindle, all for free. So without any further ado, I'd like to begin our show, but I'd like to begin, Eric, first, by responding to two questions that we received from email by some of our listeners based on our last week's show on Lyme disease. And since Dr. Gordon is an expert on Lyme, I would like him to share, we will both share our answers on these questions together. The first was a comment that a listener, Robin, brought up about the epidemic of Lyme disease in animals. She particularly wanted us to be aware of the fact that dogs and other domestic animals can get Lyme disease. So can horses, and there's a high incidence of Lyme disease in moose, apparently, in New Hampshire. So she wanted us to bring that forward to our listeners, and I think that is an important area that does not get much airtime. Eric, your thoughts on that?
Well, just that it might be very helpful to us as the veterinarian world gets more involved, because they're able to do much more interesting research and often a lot quicker and more efficient. I mean, for instance, the Bartonella culture test was developed by veterinarian pathologists. So, and I'm hoping that, maybe as more of them get more active in the Lyme disease world, we will we'll learn a lot.
Right, but again, part of this was just to let our listeners know that it's not confined to humans, that animals can get Lyme also. So this is a serious epidemic that goes beyond merely us getting Lyme disease.
Oh, absolutely, and I just keep coming back to Bartonella. Cats get a lot of Bartonella.
Right.
And, you know, there's these infections are, you know, do affect a lot of us mammals.
Absolutely. My information is that up to 40% of cats will carry Bartonella. So a scratch or a bite from a cat can convey this to us, and it's another source of how we can get that infection. Okay, the second question that was another email, which asked the very, very complicated and difficult and important question of, can Lyme be sexually transmitted? And I'll maybe take the first stab at that question. Lyme, as a bacteria, is a spirochete, perhaps most similar to syphilis amongst the various bacteria. And we know that this spirochete, the Lyme bacteria Borrelia, can be present in virtually every secretion that we can possibly create. So it is present in vaginal fluids, sperm, semen, tears, breast milk. It can cross the placenta. So it is possible for this bacteria to be transmitted, we believe, sexually. And in fact, I think there was a paper published just a few months ago, which is the first paper to begin to address the subject, suggesting that that would, was indeed possible. Eric?
Yes, well, this is a question I have wrestled with for many a year, and because it's definitely possible. The thing we don't know is the frequency of transmission, how easy it is. I would like to think that it's not too easy, but I think the data isn't there. We do see a lot of families where both partners do have Lyme. But we just don't know yet whether they're passing it back and forth. But it looks biologically it is definitely possible. But lots of sexually transmitted diseases are not transmitted easily. You know, my favorite example is hepatitis C is clearly a sexually transmitted disease, but there are many times when people who live together and have sex often don't transmit it.
That's an excellent example. And I share with you the fact that I don't think it is readily transmitted, but I think it can be, because we do see a much higher incidence of Lyme in families where couples have it than you might think otherwise, particularly when one couple loves walking in the woods and might have had some tick exposure, and the other one is a city person and really never leaves the concrete jungle. We do see that. So I don't want to scare our listeners, but I also want them to be cautious and alert, and perhaps even thinking of using protection as you would with any potentially sexually transmitted disease when we're thinking about Lyme.
Yeah, and that's where I come down on it, is this is another great example that if the public health people were paying attention, we might have the answers, because we now can genetically, through the DNA typing, we can figure out if it's the same bug in both people.
So I hope we've answered these questions for our listeners, and again remind our listeners that you can ask us more questions with our phone numbers, 1-866-472-5792, or emailing me, as did the others this morning, at neilnathan@earthlink.net. So let's go ahead, Eric, and start broaching the subject of toxicities. We'll start with heavy metal and mercury toxicity. Let me give you a brief historical perspective, which is that back in the early 80s, we were hearing a lot about the possibility of mercury toxicity. And at that time, the only way that we knew how to look for mercury toxicity really was hair analysis. And I must have done hundreds of hair analysis back in those days and got virtually no positives. So I didn't know what to make of it. I didn't doubt the possibility that there was mercury toxicity, but I was having a great deal of trouble documenting it or defining it or knowing what we were talking about. And around 1990, Dr. Dietrich Klinghart came up with the concept that mercury was bound so tightly to certain body tissues, mostly brain and nerve tissue, that in order to pull it out of the body or demonstrate its presence or begin to quantitate it, you had to do what he developed as a DMPS challenge test, where DMPS is a simple chemical that chelates or binds mercury much better than anything else and then pulls it out into the urine. And using that test, Dietrich was able to demonstrate that, yes, we had a lot of mercury toxicity in our culture and in our environment. And when we adopted that test, we began to see it by the droves. So that's my memory of how we kind of got started in this world. Eric, do I have that right?
I got into it a little bit later in the early 90s. And, by that time, people were doing a fair amount of chelation. What we did see were people who ate a lot of fish would often have mercury in their hair. but it didn't correlate with people who had a lot of amalgams, a lot of, you know, mercury in their teeth. And I'm looking forward to, I hear next week you're going to have Dr. Shade on, and I think he can really talk about this in depth, but it's really important to remember how different inorganic mercury is, and that's what's in your amalgams, versus the methyl mercury or organic mercury is what we have from fish. And your inorganic is much more toxic, but is not excreted out of the body through the hair, where the fish mercury is not quite as toxic as long as it stays in the methyl form, and hair is one of the ways you'll see it. So it's these tests are, not always as straightforward. Like everything we do in the kind of medicine we do, it depends on the individual. In fact, what I was going to preface this all our talking about, toxics is that the reason that conventional medicine doesn't pay attention to what we call the toxic problems in our culture, unless people are dying from them, is because they look at population studies. They don't look at what happens to the individuals in front of them. And if you look at thousands of people, you really have to have something that's incredibly toxic in the right amount to cause problems. It's just like cigarette smoke. I mean, look, it took them 50 years to acknowledge that cigarette smoke was bad, because lots of people can smoke two packs a day and they don't get cancer and they don't get lung disease. You know, and that's the problem we have with all these toxic things. It's really about your body and the individual toxin that determines how much of a problem it's going to be for you. So I'm sorry, I just want that. That's really, I think, a very important point, because one of the reasons that we get blown off by conventional world is that there are lots of people who can tolerate a lot of mercury and doesn't seem to bother them. And then we have other people who very, very, very small amounts will just stop their whole detox pathway. And that's probably because one of your favorite subjects is their methylation pathways aren't working. And without glutathione, even a little bit of mercury becomes very, very toxic.
It does. And just for our listeners, there is what I would call standalone toxicity for mercury particularly. And by that I mean, what would tip me off to thinking that someone might have mercury toxicity? And for me, it would be things like cognitive impairment, where people's brains aren't working well, brain fog, memory difficulties, problems with focus, memory, concentration, headache. Those would push me more. In addition, there are very specific neurological events like peripheral neuropathy, ALS, MS, all of the neurodegenerative diseases are partly associated, as are some of the autoimmune diseases. So when I have a patient who presents to me with those kinds of problems, that's when I begin to think the process of, okay, maybe I should be looking for heavy metal toxicity. And mercury is what we're talking about initially here, but keep in mind that there's also significant toxicity in our environment from lead, aluminum, nickel, cadmium, and a wide variety of other materials.
So what I would always remind people is that, I agree with your list to make you think that mercury can be there, but we have to remember that same list is for almost any chronic inflammatory chemical or bug. I mean, that is the thing.
Exactly.
The body only has so many ways to respond to chronic irritation or chronic inflammation. But mercury is often underneath when people aren't responding to other therapies, when they're just not getting better. Mercury toxicity is huge, because it ties up so much of your sulfur groups, these very reactive chemicals that your body needs for detoxification, and to be able to fight infections and build tissue. So it's very, very important. And mercury is ubiquitous. We forget, especially out here in California, you know, the gold rush, when they took the gold out, they spread the mercury around because they used mercury to help get the gold out of the rocks. And they just used it like crazy.
We will,
and they
we
have,
will
have
back.
A fair number of mercury mines in Northern California, and we've spread it into the groundwater. In fact, one of the areas up until a few years ago, most of the literature on mercury toxicity in Northern California was all about the birds that were poisoned from eating the fish in the San Francisco Bay, because that's where all the, and the Sacramento, that's where all the mercury efflux from the mining wound up, is sitting in the bottom of the bay.
Okay, so Eric, we need to wind down to a break in just a moment. But in the meantime, first I want to mention that, and welcome, one of our proud sponsors, which is Researched Nutritionals. We turn to them for its specialty immune, energy, and detox formulations, which pertains particularly to this program, which promotes a healthier quality of life for some of our toughest patients. I use these products on a regular basis, and in this context, I particularly want to mention the use of their product, Tri-Fortify Orange, which is an absorbable form of reduced glutathione, and we've mentioned glutathione is a key material in pulling these toxins out of the body. Many patients have detox and heavy metal issues, and this particular product, Tri-Fortify Orange, particularly helpful in this context. So in that regard, if you want to learn more about this, please go to researchednutritionals.com or call toll-free 1-800-755-3402, and we'll go to a break right now.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com. Do you or someone you love struggle with Alzheimer's disease or some other disorder? Many times, there is not an adequate support forum where you can learn from and discuss topics from top guest experts. Tune in to NeuroMatters, The Brink of Alzheimer's with Dr. Sam Brinkman. Although thought of as a disease that affects only older individuals, increasingly symptoms are being found in people who are in their 40s and 50s. Get the answers. NeuroMatters airs live Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan@earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Neil Nathan, and I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Dr. Eric Gordon. And we've been talking about heavy metal toxicity. And we're really planning on talking about toxicity as a concept. And as Eric is very clearly pointing out, toxicity is a very interesting generic term. Many people can conceive of the concept that we might be toxic in different ways, but we really have very poor tools for defining toxicity. Now, one of our better tools, actually, is the one we started talking about when we talked about doing a DMPS challenge test in which you get a very short IV using DMPS, and then you get that intravenously. That takes about 15 minutes to a half an hour. Then you collect your urine for anywhere from 6 to 24 hours, and then we send that lab to various laboratories. We use Doctors Data in Chicago, and they do a very nice job of telling us what's in that urine, and that tells us a lot about what that person is struggling with. So that's a type of toxicity which we are able to define fairly well and get consistent laboratory tests. But the overall concept of toxicity, which is receiving a lot more attention, is a lot more vague. And so, Eric, why don't we try to broach that subject and try to make it a bit more concrete for our listeners?
Yeah, well, as we were talking about earlier, the concept of toxicity is difficult for Western medicine to think of, except in terms of near death. You know, the idea that low level toxicity makes them nervous, because it is so poorly defined and it is so individual. It's going to vary dramatically from person to person what the level will be, that will, in fact, make your body work less well, because that's basically what toxins do. They just don't let your body work efficiently. And they can be toxins that poison how your mitochondria work, the energy-producing part of the cell. They can be toxins that interfere with how things get across your cell membrane. But they can also just build up in the interstitial spaces. That's the spaces between the cells. And that is something that, again, it's always kind of surprised me of, you know, how many people don't realize what's happening to them. Like when they get a massage and they get a headache, or they feel kind of sick the next day and they think, oh, that's a bad thing. Well, the bad thing was that they're storing lots of chemicals or waste products in their tissues. And just the massage actually got enough blood flow to the area that allowed it to move. So it's, the big question is not just what you're exposed to, but probably the bigger one is, can you get rid of it?
Correct. Now, I'm told we have a caller on hold, so why don't we put Sarah through?
Hi, Dr. Gordon and Dr. Nathan. I just had a question about Dr. Gordon was saying with the fish in the Bay Area, they've found a lot of mercury in it. Is it better not to eat a lot of fish if you live in the Bay Area? I've had doctors tell me that I should have more fish in my diet.
Thank you, Sarah. That's an excellent question and a complicated one. Because we're talking about two different things here. One is fish a healthy thing for you generically? And the answer would be, yeah, for most people it is, except for Dr. Gordon, who is allergic to fish. So not for him, but for me, it is. On the other hand, it's not just in the Bay Area. When I was hiking in New Hampshire several years ago, there is a sign posted on remote lakes in the White Mountains saying, the state health department has determined that consumption of more than one trout a month from these waters will overload your body with mercury toxicity. Every state, the health department has a listing for the amount of mercury that is found in the fish that is caught in their waters. When I lived in Minnesota, they would list those amounts. So the state health department is aware that there is a fairly heavy amount of mercury in fish generally, and that there are places where it's more toxic than others. You know, particularly it's found in the bigger fish because mercury accumulates in the tissues. So the little fish eat teeny fish, and then the bigger fish eat them, and the bigger fish eat them. So the biggest of the fish tend to be the ones that are the highest in mercury. Eric, you want to expand?
Yeah, well, I have to admit, because I don't like, it's really terrible. I'm one of those few people who actually do not like seafood. But yes, the larger fish, especially the shark and things of that sort, and are really high in mercury, and there are excellent lists, which I forget all the time because I don't eat fish. You know, smaller fish are much safer to eat. And, you know, it's an important issue because fish is a very, very healthy food. But unfortunately, as we put more and more mercury into the environment, I mean, the mercury's always been there on a background level, but coal-burning plants in China and in the United States have filled the air, the atmosphere with mercury, which then precipitates and is bioaccumulates in the oceans and then accumulates in fish, and we get to eat it. So the bigger the fish, the fattier the fish, the more mercury you're probably going to get. And
So it's going to come down to, like it is always, moderation. It's about a moderate consumption of fish is probably healthy for you, and it might be good for you to do your own personal research to learn in your area where you live which fish are the safest, which are the ones that you want to be consuming that would have the least amount of mercury. Keep in mind that it's not just fish that will give you mercury toxicity. The what are called silver amalgams, which are actually mercury amalgams, have a heavy amount of mercury in them. And as they leach the mercury out of the amalgams, that will enter your body as well, often being stored in the brain and nerve areas, which is not a place you particularly want it stored. I mean, for that reason, I want to emphasize the fact that it is known in conventional medicine that, for example, if you had a peripheral neuropathy or if you had Alzheimer's disease, you ought to look for mercury toxicity. And many patients have that test, and their neurologist will look for it. Unfortunately, the test that they do is either a blood level or a urine level, and that's not where mercury is, and that it won't be found even if it is present. So part of the problem is really knowing where to look to even begin the process of dealing with that.
Yeah. And let me make two quick points about this. One, if people will hit the, there's lots of websites, but the Natural Resources Defense Council has a very nice list of fishes from least mercury to highest mercury content, and it's just right there. And I said the highest ones are the things I mentioned, you know, like the shark, a swordfish, tilefish, tuna, especially, you know, the king mackerel, marlin, the big guys. But they have a very nice list, which can be helpful for those of you who out there who enjoy your seafood. And I said, again, as far as testing, I think Dr. Shade, who's going to be on the show next week, is going to be able to give you a different perspective on looking at mercury, at measuring mercury in blood, urine, and hair without using chelators. And because he is able to speciate the mercury, it means he can figure out whether it's organic or inorganic and look at the relative levels, he can give you an idea if there's excess mercury there without using a strong chelator. I myself and like Dr. Nathan have always used IV DMPS, and I think it's very safe. I know there are people who think it can be horrible, and that's usually in people who were given large doses rather quickly and who have no glutathione stores. So we always check before we use it. Anyway, I don't want to go too much on that topic, but I think it's important to remember that there are many ways of dealing with heavy metal toxicities, and I think they have to be adjusted to the sensitivity of the patient. But it's going to get it back to that general area of toxicity. It keeps coming back to the individual, and that's my big concern, is that most doctors are taught by epidemiologists. Those are the people who study populations. And populations are very helpful in some areas, but they mislead us when we're talking about your individual health. You know, they can let the government know where they can spend the money that will help 80 or 90% of the people, but the person in front of me may not be part of that 80 or 90%. In fact, usually they're not. They're usually part of 1 or 2%, and their needs will not be met as long as we are looking at large-scale population studies. We have to look at what happens to sensitive people, because they're the ones who will are our canaries. As we're poisoning this world, they're the ones who are getting sick first.
Right, and I want to come back to that in a bit, because I think that is a huge, important thread that will underlie a lot of our discussions, because for weeks we've been talking about fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue and Alzheimer's and all kinds of chronic illnesses. And when the body becomes more ill, any toxicity begins to play a much higher role in their inability to process those toxins, and then begins to be additive. So again, I'm going to come back to that when we come back. But in the meantime, I would like to mention another of our fine sponsors, which is that of BioResource. And in context of what we're saying, doctors and patients are concerned with these environmental toxicities, as well as everyday radiation exposure from computers, other devices, or even things such as Fukushima, which we can talk about shortly as well. Now, BioResource makes some unique, effective remedies to help remove some of these toxicities from the body. Most notably, the Pekana, P-E-K-A-N-A, product Radinex, R-A-D-I-N-E-X, which is particularly helpful to remove the effects of radiation from the body. These are oral homeopathic drops, and they also make the product ENLRD, which is an herbal capsule from Beyond Balance that was developed to support the body's ability to detoxify environmental toxicities. In addition, Picana Toxex, T-O-X-E-X, drops help to eliminate heavy metals from the body. So I recommend that healthcare practitioners find out more by contacting BioResource at 800-203-3775. That's 800-203-3775, and we will go to our break.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
Are you ready for a real, fact-based show about alternative and natural approaches to health? Listen for Live Healthy, Be Healthy with Drs. Jim and Janine Fox. We're not about the latest health fads. We're about proven methods from real patients and real situations. Each week's show is an eye-opening look behind the scenes of real health. Live Healthy, Be Healthy can be heard live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan at earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Neil Nathan, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Dr. Eric Gordon, the director and creator of Gordon Medical Associates, one of the most prominent holistic and alternative and integrative care facilities anywhere, and we happen to be located in Northern California. I will encourage people to go to gordonmedical.com and really look at the list of fabulous people that we have working at the clinic and the kind of services that we offer, which is unique and top of the line from my perspective, although I confess that I'm biased because I work there.
Well, thank you. Yes.
So if you've joined us, we are talking about toxicities. And one of the reasons that I particularly wanted to bring this subject up early in our broadcast schedule is that it's my belief that the reason that we are seeing the epidemic of fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, autism, Lyme disease at this time in our culture is that our entire population is being subjected to way more toxic exposure than ever before in the history of humankind. We have 80,000 new chemicals in our environment since 1970. And of those 80,000 chemicals, a whopping 500 have actually been tested for their toxicity in humans. And of those, only a handful have been tested with several together to see what they do. And another example of that is when we got DDT out of the environment years ago, we thought that that was gone, and we are finding toxic levels of that in our fat biopsies of everyone in our world 40 years later after it was removed completely from exposure. So these are toxins that once they get into our system, they don't leave very fast. We don't know how to get rid of them. We don't measure them. We don't pay attention to them. We just accept them as a part of our world. And I personally believe that they are one of the major reasons that we are wrestling with the kinds of illnesses that we are. We often use the phrase the canary in the coal mine, referring to when the miners used to go down into the toxic world of coal mines, they brought canaries with them because canaries were more sensitive to those fumes. And when the canary keeled over, that was the sign that they all had to get out of the mine in a hurry. So the people that we're starting to see with these illnesses, we're calling them the canary in the coal mine. We think that all of us will get sick before too long if we don't start to pay attention to this. So I don't want to be I am concerned.
Well, I think the concern is appropriate because, you know, these low level, but we don't know when they're going to reach a tipping point. It's a lot like air pollution, you know, because, the apocryphal story I don't think is really true about how you can boil a frog if you turn the water up slowly, you know, slow enough. They don't realize that it reaches boiling. That's what's happening to our environment is as it degrades, it's a slow process often, step by step. And, you know, I mean, it took us years before we responded in America to the smog in L.A., you know, and China has done the same thing, but rapidly. And there, you know, it's that same issue that people will tolerate a tremendous amount of low-level poison. And it takes a lot of political will to change the direction unless people start dropping dead in the street. And that doesn't happen with these things. I mean, that's the good news.
Well, they're not dropping dead, God bless it, but they are getting sick. And and we are seeing more than our share of these sick individuals. So I really have concerns about what are we all being exposed to? And in that regard, I'll bring up, which for me is another scary subject about which there's very, very little known, and that's our radiation exposure from Fukushima, which is, we don't know. There are websites that you can go to that will scare the pants off you because they're announcing that there is already toxic levels of radiation on the West Coast, and there are websites that go, nah, nothing is here. And as a physician, I need more information to be able to help my patients properly. I think I should have it. But as I'm sure you all know, there's been a blackout of information on the radiation exposure from Fukushima. which began 10 days after it occurred. So we are not being allowed to learn. And honestly, that scares me more than even knowing what we're being subjected to.
Well, I think the problem we have is that many people involved in the world of low-level radiation exposure truly believe that the danger is minimal. So they think that by just keeping the information quiet, it keeps the hysteria from developing. The problem is we haven't really studied the effects of low-level radiation well enough. I mean, it's the old story. If it really is low level, it might just actually be helpful, because it's true. A tiny, tiny bit of the poison that will kill you will make you stronger. That's how the system works. But we really need to study and find out where the tipping points are, and that has not been done. It's just this close your eyes approach, because if cancers develop on the low-level exposures, we're talking about timelines of, usually 10, 15 years. And so it just gets diluted, and we never find out. So I agree with you. I wish the information was clear so we could at least learn and discover how much we should be concerned. The current approach is that the experts know best, and they say there's nothing to worry about, and we're not going to even give you the information that's out there, because then you might worry your pretty little heads about it, which is sexist and not useful.
Well, the best information I have, just not to give people false reassurance, because I don't know enough to do that, but the best information I have is about 6 months ago, the Canadian government, who does do some studies on this, looked at the fish that were being caught off the Pacific Ocean on Canadian waters. And when they analyzed those fish, there was not any increase in radiation above background. So at least 6 months ago, we could feel fairly comfortable that there was really no reason to get paranoid yet. Well, and now,
which is wonderful, and I hope that continues, but it's just this, it would be nice if we had real science. Unfortunately, we have true believers. In fact, this is really what's wrong with our whole culture of science, is that science should be an inquiry into what's in front of us. Unfortunately, we live in a world where true believers on both sides tend to slant the news. I mean, we see this in the Lyme world, something we're both intimately aware of. I mean, we really see lots of people with Lyme disease. We also see lots of people who have been treated for years, perhaps inappropriately, with antibiotics, because it's not Lyme that's making them sick. But and so we have people who've not been given treatments because their doctors do not believe, and believe is the word I'm emphasizing here, and other people who have been overtreated because their doctors believe. And what we lack is data, and that's what we have to ask all of our listeners to be thinking about in their own ways of getting the government to start just wanting to investigate instead of having to know the answer before you start. That's not science, but that's what people do these days. Most scientific studies are designed by people who have an opinion on the outcome. It's not done to try to disprove something, as that's real science, is when you try to disprove your theory or your hypothesis. What we're doing today is people want to organize a study to prove that what they're doing works. And, from the drug companies on down, it's not good. And in the world of toxicity is especially important. Mold neurotoxins, Dr. Nathan's strong interest, is a great example. Nobody wants to look at this because of possible liability. So denying it exists is the best thing to do.
Well, but that brings up the political financial spins that occur around these whole areas. As you were speaking, I was thinking about Ebola and how that has reached the news, and that we've taken a stance that, oh my God, we have got to throw millions and millions and millions of dollars into treating Ebola. right now, although at least in our own country, it's not present. And my concern about that is we've also been talking about Lyme disease here, in which we have literally millions of people who have Lyme disease who are in desperate need of a tremendous amount of scientific research and effort so we can begin to deal with that. And I'm a little baffled by that. I'm looking at, okay, we're going to spend all of this money on a disease that we do not have here and not much of anything on a disease that's truly epidemic. And that begins to be a political spin, not about truth or not truth or ethics or any of those things. It's about how can we look good to the rest of the world. And to me, that's of great concern, because I think in doing so, we're missing the forest for the trees.
Yes. So, I mean, it would be nice to get research back doing research, but unfortunately, about 30, now almost 40 years ago, I guess, the government decided to privatize research and get out of the business of funding it. And so now the only, not the only, but the majority of research is just done by people who can see a way to make money at it. And that does not make for great science. It occasionally moves us forward, but lots of times it just moves us in circles, in smaller circles of how we can, you know, make the thing I figured out yesterday be a little bit better. But people with new ideas have a hard time getting anywhere. And toxicity and dealing with toxicity is first we have to do the research. We see in our patients the results. When we treat them, when we detox them using, you know, anything from saunas and the FSM and various physical modalities and biochemical modalities, they get better. You know, just cleaning up their diet and taking the load off the liver.
Speaking of that, Eric, I appreciate the segue. I did want to mention to our listeners that one of our sponsors is Frequency-Specific Microcurrent at frequencyspecific.com, and they do have, with their wonderful low-energy devices, they have the ability to get into the tissues, all of the tissues that are concerned with detoxification, like liver, kidney, skin, and with using specific frequencies, we are capable of helping the body to remove toxins using the frequency-specific energies. So I will encourage our listeners to go to the frequencyspecific.com site to find people who can help them with that, which includes, of course, Gordon Medical Associates. And second, I would like to bring up our other fine sponsor, Metagenics. Metagenics is one of the oldest supplement companies and best researched in our country. They provide us with a wonderful array of a wonderful array of products that we can use to help with detoxification, and particularly. And from what we're talking about today, the products that we would talk about would be Ultra Clear Renew, AdvaClear, AdvaClear, Ultra Clear Plus, and MetalliClear, all of which are groups of materials specifically made by the Metagenics company to help the body detoxify to a greater and easier extent. So that is Metagenics.com. And with that, we'll go to a break.
Dr. Nathan invites you to go to his website, neilnathanmd.com, for additional presentations and blogs. You can buy his new book, Healing is Possible, New Hope for Chronic Fatigue, Fibromyalgia, Persistent Pain, and Other Chronic Illnesses on Amazon, Kindle, and through all booksellers. Information about personal medical phone consultations or office visits is also available through the website, neilnathanmd.com, as well as at gordonmedical.com.
Tune in every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time and 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness channel for Eat Well to Live Well with Kelly Hill. Kelly covers our relationship with food and teaches us how easy eating well and living well can be, taking us on a weekly food journey, guiding us to a more rich and vibrant life. So tune in every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel for Eat Well to Live Well with Kelly Hill.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today with Dr. Neil Nathan and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. If you have a question or comment for the show today, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to neilnathan@earthlink.net. Now, back to The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today.
Welcome back to our show, Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. I'm your host, Dr. Neil Nathan, joined by my friend and guest co-host, Dr. Eric Gordon. We're talking about toxicities in various forms. We've talked about heavy metal toxicity, chemical toxicities, some degree radiation exposures, and now I'd like to broach another subject, also controversial, which is electromagnetic toxicity. And I'd probably start by seeing if I can make this as tangible as I possibly can, because I know that the stereotype electromagnetic radiation is the paranoid individual walking around with an aluminum homemade cap on his head, which prevents him from being affected by UFO signals. And that's kind of a standing joke in some ways. But unfortunately, both Eric and I have had many, many patients who are extremely electromagnetically sensitive to the point that it clearly makes them ill. Back in the early or mid-90s, I was working, as was Eric, with Dr. Norm Shealy, and Norm was one of the first people to recognize the reality of electromagnetic sensitivity. In fact, he published a paper in which he named this electromagnetic dysthymia, D-Y-S-T-H-Y-M-I-A, which I think is a very good name for this. And when we were working with Norm, we would take patients and do a brain map in which we have electrodes attached to the brain and we're monitoring the brain waves from different areas of the brain. Now, there are four main types of brain waves, alpha, beta, theta, and delta. Alpha wave is a wave of relaxation, if you will. Beta waves are a wave of the mind being focused. Gamma waves are waves of creativity, and delta waves are nobody's home. Lights are on, nobody's home. So when delta waves predominate, it means that the brain is shut down and not very functional. Now, what we would do is we would be monitoring this, and we would take an electrical clock and from a far distance above the head without the patient even knowing what we were doing. They didn't even know that this possibility existed. While they were getting their brainwaves measured, we would slowly bring that clock down towards the top of the head. It might not even be touching it. And at a certain point, those patients who are electromagnetically sensitive, we would watch a profound shift of those brainwaves where they shifted to a delta predominance. Meaning, again, the lights are on, nobody's home. And we began to realize this is a real thing. There's nothing psychogenic or psychological about this. This is real, that for some people, their sensitivities are such that the electromagnetic waves really bother them. And now that we live in a world that is filled with electromagnetic stimulation, infinitely more than any of our predecessors, kind of have to start looking at that.
And I think what's so important for, you know, for people to think about, I shouldn't say for people, but what I've been thinking about is the huge increase in people who have extreme sensitivities to EMF energies. 20 years ago, I had a few patients who were, 30 years ago, a few patients who were sensitive. But now it's much, much higher, and it varies tremendously, but it's there, and it seems to be getting more intense. So, and right now, actually, this weekend, we're having a guest come to demonstrate as his device, and we actually serendipitously, I've gathered about four other devices that are supposed to deal with EMF, either change the characteristics of the wave or do something to make it less bothersome to the living system, because that's what this is all about. And I'll let you know, and maybe you can report back to your listeners what we find about these different products. It's always befuddled me. I mean, there's lots of products out there to help this and help that, and I personally do not understand the science behind it. You know, I mean, I always wish that I understood the physics better, but I just don't. So, and I'm kind of left with having to just go by what works. Because when people start to explain this to me, you know, everybody can sound really good. It's almost like I feel sometimes a patient in front of me. I guess I can sell them anything because I know the biochemistry. It doesn't mean I'm right.
Well, I mean, true. My physics is way weaker than my biochemistry, as is yours.
Yeah.
One of the phenomena that we saw recently is when smart meters were forced upon California residents. About 2 years ago, I had several patients who, at the day that their smart meter was installed in their home, they went brain dead. They were absolutely unable to function. And these were previously high-functioning people in very prominent jobs, very bright PhDs, heads of their company, and all of a sudden, with the presence of the smart meter, their brain stopped working, and many of them had to leave the city and move to extremely rural environments to be able to function. So I think that although these are extremes and not totally typical, the sudden influx of electromagnetics at a very high level is a potential thing that we really have to worry about, particularly, you know, with our children. There are available on the internet photos of the amount of electromagnetic penetration into the brain simply from holding a cell phone next to your ear. And the older you are, the less penetration. So there are photos that I've seen, and I know, Eric, you've seen them also, where an adult, it will penetrate a little bit into the brain. But with a 10-year-old, it penetrates much deeper, and with a 5-year-old, much deeper. And we have 5-year-olds now who carry their own cell phones and are using them regularly. So this becomes increasingly scary. What are we subjecting our world to right now?
Well, that is the question. I love technology. I'm not saying we throw it away. I'm just saying we really need to spend a little time making sure that what we're doing is what we think we're doing, you know, and if there are ways to minimize the effects. I mean, that is the thing, is that just, like, you know, I have faith that we can live with technology, you know, but there's no question. I mean, Paul Chaney, of those people who are familiar with the chronic fatigue world, Paul is, I consider, one of the, you know, the fathers of American chronic fatigue explorations. He does a lot of work looking at the effects of different things on the heart using an echocardiogram, a sound wave test of the heart. And he's
Eric,
definitely
we're going to need to wind down for today.
Okay.
We can bring that up again later. Eric, thanks so much for joining me today. And I'd like our listeners to please tune in next week when we will have Mary Ellen Chalmers, a fabulous holistic dentist, with us, along with Chris Shade, our expert on mercury toxicity, and Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum will be rejoining us for that show. So please tune in next week. Thank you for listening, and be well. And thanks, Eric, so much for joining us.
Thank you again for joining us for The Cutting Edge of Health and Wellness Today. Please join Dr. Neil Nathan and co-host Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum again next Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time and 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. And this week, apply what you've learned today to enjoy better health.